This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.
I don't think I'm a prophetess all the time, but sometimes I just am so prescient that I have to presume that I see things that other people don't see just a little bit ahead of them. It's not like I can tell you what's going to happen in 10 years, but I can tell you what's going to happen next week sometimes. And I certainly have been very prescient when it comes to the insanity of discussions that have to do with ceasefires in Gaza. I finished my podcast this morning around 10:30, I guess. It was relatively early in the morning, not as early as sometimes, but I had to wait until after 10 to actually do it because I was supposed to be online. Do I reveal too much of my personal life on the air? Sometimes I think I do. Anyway, I had to order some tickets online, and they started selling them at 10 a.m., so I couldn't get anything started until after I did that, and then it turned out I couldn't do it anyway. So I went and recorded the podcast. And the podcast was basically revisiting the story of Israel's fight against Hamas. And I had a feeling, I knew that there was something going on at the UN. The Security Council, rather, was looking again at a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire because it's Ramadan, and calling for the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages, which, by the way, Hamas has no intention of doing. This is the first resolution demanding a ceasefire that passed at the Security Council. Okay? The U.S. abstained. In other words, they didn't veto. They abstained, which meant they can't veto, which is disgusting, and should tell the Democrats or whatever Jews are left in the Democrat Party, you're in the wrong party. You are in a party that wants to see the end of Israel. And I suspect the end of Jews wouldn't disturb them at all. So just because you're living in the diaspora, don't get too cocky. They came after Jews in the diaspora before. The U.S. did not veto this resolution because it wants there to be a release of the hostages. Okay, but if it's tied to a ceasefire, that doesn't work for Israel. And I'm tired of hearing about the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip. The Hamas is responsible for that. Not anybody else, certainly not Israel. And then the prime minister canceled the visit that some of his senior advisors had scheduled with the White House. I think it was Thursday. They were supposed to come. And he said, no. If the United States is not going to block a resolution condemning us in the UN, then obviously they're not with us. And if you're not with us, you're against us. And if you're against us, kiss my tuchus. That's what Benjamin Netanyahu said to Joe Biden and his crew of anti-Semites. And that's what they are. These people disgust me. At the very, core of my being, they make me not even angry anymore. They make me resolute. Which is why, when I woke up, I knew that something wonderful was going to come down the pike. I kind of thought it might be something in my personal life wonderful, which happens all the time. It's not like I'm desperate for a blessing. I get them all the time. Thank you, Lord. But I thought something big was going to happen because I had this fantasy that this DA, Attorney General in New York, Letitia James, was going to be totally humiliated today. Like, I had an image of her going over to Trump Tower with like a whole phalanx of state troopers and trying to padlock the door or something, and then being told you can't do that. So I was hoping, well, maybe I'm right and that's going to happen. But it was even better. Okay, because what ended up happening was that not only can she not put a padlock on any of Donald Trump's properties, but he doesn't have to come up with $500 million today, or really, I don't think he's ever going to have to come up with it, but certainly not today, which was the deadline. You know, everybody's talking about, oh, at midnight, she's going to show up at Trump Tower. And even I was thinking she might do that. She's such a camera hog. And she said from the beginning of her campaign for this position, this office, hey, I'm going after Donald Trump. So, I think she said, if he doesn't have the money to pay, then I'm taking his stuff. I'm prepared, she said, to make sure. Well, guess what? He shows up at the New York court for a separate hearing, the one on the payment to the Stormy McDougals or whatever, and Stormy Daniels. And he doesn't answer any questions that are being fired at him as he's walking in, which is unusual for him. But somebody shouted out, did you get a bond? And he did not respond. He was railing in a whole bunch of Truth Social posts about the civil judgment. And, you know, I kept getting text messages and emails saying, like, Trump Tower, take your hands off Trump Tower. And, you know, I know he's got to be just so ticked off. But then the news comes down. No. He's got 10 days to come up with less than $200 million. Now, mind you, last week he said, I've got $400, $500 million in cash. So he doesn't have to do anything, except if he was smart, he'd pay the bond immediately, because that puts everything on hold while his appeal is pending. They're trying to starve his 2024 campaign of cash. This is his money. This is money that he earned. This is money that he has suffered the slings and arrows to try and hold on to. His properties, he calls them his babies. And the idea that they were going to force him to sell them, they were going to seize them and sell them at like stupid low prices, really, is so unfair and so undemocratic and so typical of the left and unfortunately of the Democrat Party right now. If you're still there, what is wrong with you? What are you waiting for? For them to seize your property, for them to seize your guns, for them to make life completely intolerable for us? I don't know. But it's unbelievable to me that when I say to people, don't worry, he's not going to have to come up with $500 million. And they say to me, well, I think this time you may be wrong. I think he's going to have to come up with it. And I kept saying, no, he's not going to have to. I don't know how they're going to get around this, but that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. That's all. And then, of course, they're going crazy now because he's in this other courtroom and he's on Truth Social and he's comparing himself. Now, mind you, this to me is really over the top, but he's just under a lot of pressure. And I have compared him to Jesus Christ myself in 2016. I did, because of the level of persecution, because of the idea that he was willing to sacrifice everything for the country. So I had made that analogy once, half-hearted, half-joking, but I had made that. So today, it's Holy Week, and he said, look at this. You know, look at what they're doing. They surround me with hatred. They want me to to you know, do things and be punished in ways that a wicked man would be punished. These are false accusers. And then, of course, that happened to Jesus. Oh, the left, who doesn't believe in God, or if they believe in God, it's only when it's convenient for them. They went ballistic. Oh, how could he say, how dare he? Hey, at this point, I think he can say and do just about anything he wants, because they have made him into a martyr. He's not Jesus. He doesn't claim to be a Messiah, but he has become a martyr. But who could have ever imagined one of the richest guys that we've ever seen in our country? I mean, by today's standards, not so much. I mean, he's not a Bezos, Musk, category, but for his time, and even for this time, he's one of the richest, most successful, and at one point, most beloved characters in America. And yet, they just are relentless. And I've said it a million times, and I'll say it again. I don't get it. I just don't get it. But what they've ended up doing is turned him into a superhero. People are like, people who don't like him, who don't like Republicans, who don't like law and law enforcement, they are lining up behind him. Minority groups and all kinds of people who would never, ever, ever, ever in your mind's eye, evangelical Christians, all of them lining up. Why? Because we hate persecution. We love the underdog. I have a friend who wrote a book years ago, one of my favorite books. It's on my, if you want to be a Joyce Kaufman listener, you have to read certain books. And one of them is called Underdogma. And it's the examination of how we Americans, we always side with the underdog, sometimes to a stupid degree, like siding with Gazans, as they call them. But they turned Donald Trump, of all people, into an underdog. And now people who would never, ever, 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 ever be allied, joined together, are. Only they could have done this. Only the devious, disgusting, immoral, insane leftists could have done this. And I don't know whether to say thank you or to, you know, trip them when they walk in the room. Believe me, I wanted to say something a little bit harsher, but I'm on good behavior today. It's Holy Week. You know, today was the day, though, that Jesus walked into the temple and turned over the money changers' tables. Just saying. Seems like the money changers' tables got overturned today. I'm not comparing anybody to anybody, but the story sounds familiar to me. Anyway, don't forget to have our app on your phone or on your laptop. That's the 850 WFTL app. That gives you access to all the podcasts. You could have been listening to my podcast already today before the show. Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it, right? Or you could participate in contests. We're giving away a 4-pack to Sunfest. That's valuable. But you got to either have the app or visit the website, 850WFTL.com. Let me take, oh, by the way, as promised, I did get a hold of Robert Bork Jr. because I said that there's something fishy with this antitrust against Apple that bothered me. And I'm not an expert. My son is, but he's also, you know, he's not in a position right now in his life to go into depth, but Robert Bork Jr. is, and so he'll be a guest on my show at the bottom of the hour, 3:30. But I have another segment before that. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back. I think one of the things that everybody has to be very mindful of is when things are working in your favor, even if you don't understand them, just be grateful. That's all. I am not one of these people who sits around and goes, well, that doesn't make sense. Therefore, yeah, therefore what? You know, I'm watching some of the behavior that took place this weekend when Christopher Ray and Kamala Harris show up in Parkland and stand around in the most horrific memory place that we have, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, And they use that as a way of putting in some legislation. Well, no, it's not even legislation. They use that to move into areas that really Congress is the only body that should be tackling, and they should be doing what we want. They are our representatives. I love the way everybody thinks that we have no power. Well, we just have to take it. No, we don't. We don't have to take it. And I don't think we're going to. I think people more so than ever look at what's happening all over the world, and then they look at what's happening right in their own neighborhoods, and they say, you got to be kidding. We are not giving up our guns. There's no way. You got martial law in the subways of my hometown, New York. There's no other way you can describe that. When the National Guard is going through your stuff before you can get on a subway train to go to work, that's martial law. It may not have affected every piece of their lives yet, but that's coming. And then you have people who will do these most... The level of violence in the criminality and the excusing of it is unbelievable. You know, young girls beat up other young girls, and then they get a GoFundMe page. And people donate money. You know, I understand that these are the times that were predicted, but it doesn't make them any easier to watch. And that's why I'm always looking for the real story behind the surface story. Because it sounds really good, right? When they say, well, Apple controls too much of a market and we need a fairer marketplace. And people become sort of inclined to think that, don't worry, this will be for our good. Anytime you lose any level of freedom, no matter how minuscule they tell you it is not good. And when they tell businesses that because you're successful, you must be punished, it's not good. When they tell a multimillionaire that we're not going to allow you to maintain your own property, we're going to take it away from you because we think you said it was worth too much. Sometimes I sit here and I say, the whole world is upside down. We're supposed to have a ceasefire with a bunch of renegade terrorists who are trying to destroy Israel. And people get mad at Bibi Netanyahu. All the headlines today, predictably, you know, like I told you, if you're looking at headlines on the various websites or in the publications that are most commonly viewed, whether that's the New York Times or the New York Post, whatever it is, you know what you're going to hear. Oh, the UN Security Council, they said there has to be, you know, a ceasefire. Really? And then I think the subtitle or the subheading when I was looking at that headline today was Hamas praises it. I'm sure they did. But that should tell you something. And I'm just so glad that they're being exposed for who they really are. The AOCs and the Rashida Tlaibs. Look, we know who they are. We know they hate Israel. We know they're anti-Semites. We don't need to be shown any. We don't need any more proof. But we did not know that so many members of the Democrat Party and so many American people who refer to themselves as Jews, because I guess they have a cultural identity or an ethnicity of being from Jewish heritage, and they don't care. They are stomping up and down and screaming humanitarian. What happened to the anti-humanitarian actions of Hamas that Hamas was so proud of, that they videotaped it and then distributed those videotapes, including to the families of women they raped and men they killed? Apparently, that's not such a big deal. It's a bigger deal that Israel is trying to wipe out these monsters. How much better for the world would it be if these monsters were wiped out? That's the question, the only question that we should be asking. But instead, you know, we're trying to find some moral equivalency in the suffering that's going on in Gaza because Hamas set this in motion. Hamas praised this resolution. And my feeling, and certainly Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli ambassador to the UN, our feeling is this should have been vetoed. Demand for a ceasefire without making it conditional on immediate release of our hostages. Amazing. We have hostages. There are American hostages there. They just don't care. They really hate Israel. They hate the only democracy in the Middle East. They are on the side of the terrorists. And I'm just glad they were exposed. I've been saying this for years. Organizations like ZOA, a lot of people have been pointing this out in smaller ways. But now the evidence is so clear and it gets worse every day. Hamas is welcoming the UN Security Council's vote to pass a ceasefire. Well, guess what? The only people who can declare a ceasefire is Israel. That's it. Never mind. They're not doing it. And who could blame them? Anyway, I got a little aggravated this morning, but I'm trying to bring myself in. And I want to talk about this Apple case. I think it's fascinating. And who better than Robert Bork Jr.? That's his area of expertise. So you don't want to miss the next segment of the show. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm trying to get a hold of Robert Bork Jr. When we can get him, if we can get him, then we will put him on immediately. But, you know, I'm looking at another article right now that is so bizarre to me. And it's, you know, I don't understand how professional people could take themselves seriously when they become political whores. And that's the only word for a forensic psychiatrist who now says that the way he moves and the way he's walking, his gait, signals a mental decline. Really? Well, can I see the article that you have written about Joe Biden, who wanders around stages making wrong turns and stumbling and falling? Can't go up a flight of stairs onto an airplane? You know, and you want to tell me that you think Donald Trump is acting like a broken computer? He goes off on odd tangents and he's rambling. He always did that. He did it when he was young. It's just beyond my comprehension. It is. And that it's not that I don't see that there's a legitimate reason to examine both of the candidates. These are the candidates for the highest office in our country. Never mind, it's really, when you think about it, the highest office on the planet. And so we should be able to vet them. There should be examinations of their physical health and of their mental health. By the way, you notice that President Biden didn't have any cognitive testing done when he went in for his physical. Well, if I was him, I wouldn't have. Because if they had to release those results, it would have been very damning. Kind of like if they had told us about the laptop. Just saying, when the media is complicit in hiding information from the very people, us, we the people, who they have been set in place to inform. Give me the information. You don't have to decide. You just have to give me the information, and they won't. Instead, they make up stuff like, oh, Donald Trump has a publicly has challenges with his speech and his thinking, and he's walking funny. 27 psychiatrists and mental health experts assessing him. You can't make this stuff up. They don't have a problem with, you know, Joe Biden's gait, but Donald Trump looks like he might have some mental decline. I can't believe they said that. Anyway, we have gotten a hold of Robert Bork Jr. He is now on the line with me, and I am so grateful that you came on, because I instinctively, not a lawyer, even though my son is an antitrust lawyer, I don't pretend to know everything there is to know, but I know you do. And why are they going after Apple? I just don't get it.
Well, they want to have the complete set. You know, they've gone after Google and Meta and Amazon, and, you know, they need a fourth for Bridge, I guess. This administration, which is populated with radical, progressive, antitrust, so-called reformers, is out to get big tech. And there's plenty you could be, you know, grumpy about big tech, particularly when it comes to conservative speech and that sort of thing. But the one thing a lot of these companies know how to do is make a product or a service that works and the consumers flock to.
Right.
And that's the case with Apple. You know, this administration wants to assert more control over the economy, and they say that explicitly. They're not sort of sneaking around saying that. They say that explicitly. They want more control. They want more regulation. They want to rein in capitalism. And, you know, who better than one of the biggest companies in the world that makes products and services that people love? I mean, you know, DOJ ignores the fact that consumers flock to Apple because, you know, many enjoy the superior hardware and software and the sleek design and all that stuff. So they came up with this lawsuit last week. Where they say Apple's a monopoly. Okay, well, what's a monopoly? Well, they have 55% of the market. Okay, what market? They have 55% of the performance smartphone market. What is the performance smartphone market?
I don't know.
It's the market they've invented for high-end, very expensive, all the bells and whistles smartphones. And, you know, iPhone has a very expensive one, but they also sell inexpensive phones. They sell last year's model and the model before that and the one before that. You can go in there and buy, an inexpensive, great phone, or you can spend all the money you want on a fancy new one. And there is no monopoly. You know, Samsung makes more phones in the world than Apple does. It's insane.
And I guess what really bothers me is, you know, for me, I got to keep it fairly simple because I don't have a legal background. And so I say, okay, is what Apple is being accused of doing, is it hurting me or hurting other consumers? I don't have an Apple computer. I don't have a watch, but I have a phone, and I have since they came out for just the reasons you cited. How have they harmed my husband, who's got a Samsung Galaxy?
Well, I would ask him. My daughter has a Samsung. Mm-hmm. You know, she has a choice. So does your husband. And one thing that the Justice Department likes to say is, well, you know, they keep Android users, that's the other operating system, you know, which is an open system that populates all the other non-Apple phones, and they keep you know them at bay by doing things like, oh, if I send my daughter a picture from my iPhone, it won't be quite as sharp when it hits her phone. You know, right. When we share family photos, we do it on Facebook Messenger, because we both have that, and we don't have that problem. They're fixing that, by the way. But, you know, this is the level of sort of insanity that the DOJ has is using and making up this stuff. You know, they say that this is all part of Apple's exclusionary pattern of behavior. They're excluding their competitors. You know, but there's nothing in the law that says I have to make my phone easy for your other system to use.
Right.
There's nothing that says that. It's not like what do they call that in telecommunications? A common carrier. You know, mm-hmm. They're not a common carrier. They make a product, they make a great product, and so does Samsung. It's just different, and you have a choice.
But you see, this Department of Justice is so rogue from every level. I mean, they actually have prosecuted a former president for something that literally had no impact and harmed no one. There's no victim to this crime, and they get away with this because they have a media that just fawns over any effort to bring down Donald Trump or to bring down Apple or to bring down Jeff Bezos. It's like this Department of Justice is so rogue to me. I don't understand. Merrick Garland's crazy.
I don't disagree. You know, they call it lawfare. You know, that's like warfare, only lawfare. And, mm-hmm. And it's a shame because my dad worked in the Justice Department and my wife worked in the Justice Department years ago. And, you know, it was a different place than it is now. You know, I think it started to go rogue, as you say, when Obama was president. And now I'm blanking on the name of the attorney general then. But you know, he got called in front of Congress several times for some of the things he was doing, and then it's become essentially a rogue agency, as many of them are now. You know, I was thinking about this just yesterday. I can't think of too many problems in the world that don't have at the root some sort of government action. You know, and when I seem to spend all my time, as you do, I'm sure, spend a lot of time thinking, you know, complaining or thinking about what's wrong with the world these days, and it involves a government, the government of Russia invading Ukraine, or our government is not invading anybody right at the moment, but you know, they do this kind of stuff. They're essentially bullies, ideological bullies that are chasing after a new world order, which they say they are.
They don't hide it anymore.
No, they don't hide it anymore. And the antitrust is a great weapon to do that with. You know, it is a cudgel, and they're weaponizing antitrust to take on, you know, corporate giants and not so giant companies as well. I mean, you know, they went after a drug maker that was trying to merge with another drug maker, which it had actually started and spun off, and then wanted to bring it back in. And, you know, they tried to block it, not because there was anything necessarily wrong with it, but they thought there might be, some sort of issue in the future in terms of the ability of the company to dominate or abuse its market share in this cancer drug, this cancer identifying drug. And
look what they've done in the airlines. They have shut down mergers of airlines, especially these low-cost carriers. For what purpose? You know, it's not like we have a safer air travel.
Bird will probably go out of business. iRobot, was up for sale. And they blocked that. Immediately after the CEO quit, and a whole bunch of staff were laid off. This is, that's the company that makes the robotic vacuum cleaners. Mm-hmm. Who did they save or help by doing some of these things? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that there aren't instances where you ought to, apply antitrust law where there's unfair competition or predatory pricing, which is a very good thing, a very good example of something that they should be watching for. But of course, they get to define what predatory pricing is.
Right.
You know, if I'm a business person and I cut my price, that's predatory pricing. No, maybe I'm just trying to offer a better price. If I raise my price, then I'm gouging my customer. You know, the government just sits around, does that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's endless. And it just came to me. It was either Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch.
Eric Holder, that's the one. Yep.
Right. Yeah. And
thank you for being my brain there for a second.
Hey, listen, let me tell you something. I lose more words than I retrieve, so I'm learning how to live with that. But that I can't forget Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch, for that matter.
And oh well, she was another good one. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But I'll tell you, you know, I think about how government destroys good people's lives, and your father was the first one. I mean, that was really public. How people doing good for this country get targeted and their reputations get trashed and their futures get compromised. I mean, he didn't go down with the ship, but my gosh, I will never forget Joe Biden in those hearings either. How about that?
Well, I can't look at him today as president and not remember some of the shenanigans back then.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he can't remember them. But...
Good point. That's right. Well, hopefully I won't have to remember them much longer. Robert, thank you so much for coming on such short notice. I always appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. You take care. Robert Bork Jr., and his father was one of my idols. The book Slouching Towards Gomorrah is still on my you must read it list or else you can't listen to the show. That with Under Dogma. You got two books today. Go out and get them. Don't forget, coming up after me is Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags, and then, of course, the one and only Lars Larson from way out west. Tomorrow morning, Jen and Bill will be back with the South Florida Morning Show, followed by Brian Kilmeade at 9 and Dan Bongino at 12. And then, of course, I always return at 3 o'clock. But I got another segment left today, and he may have calmed me down a little, Mr. Borg did, but I still got some fire in the belly. Stay right where you are. So I didn't really talk very much at the end of last week about, well, first and foremost, I mentioned that I found it very sad that the Princess Kate story went the way it did. Sometimes people just need to be left alone. And it bothers me that the media can't accept that fact. This did not affect national security of Great Britain. It didn't. It wasn't even salacious, gossipy, you know, so-and-so's cheating on their husband. None of that. This was a really personal cancer diagnosis that a young woman with small children, who just happens to be the princess, will be the queen or the queen consort eventually. And I thought it was brutal. You know, I used to have a lot of trouble with certain reporters. One of them was Greta Van Susteren, who would go up to people who had just gone through some terrible tragedy and, you know, thrust a microphone in their face. Like, there's just sometimes where that's just not appropriate. Now, of course, it is appropriate if you're the leader of a nation and you've just invaded another nation. But you can't. You can't in any way, shape, or form say that it made sense the way they went after the, you know, the story of where is Kate and what is wrong with the picture and all that other stuff. And it just keeps going on and on and on. It's like we have become saturated with the kind of inability to stay focused on what's really important all across the board, young people, middle-aged people, old people. It's like they cast a spell on us. You know, you got a cancer diagnosis in two members of the royal family. This has got to be a really hard time for them. Why were we worried about what they were telling us and not telling us? It's just, to me, it's another example of why I just despise the media. I looked at this whole story with Ronna McDaniel. First and foremost, I never was a Ronna McDaniel fan. I know President Trump was. But anybody who's a blood relative of Mitt Romney is suspect. No, I'm just kidding. But she just never was appealing to me. And so she gets hired by NBC and MSNBC and all these other nonsensical far left. They're not even like as shameless and silly as CNN, they're like ridiculous. And then the nation is paying careful attention to her. Viewers are repulsed by her. What? What? I mean, we're repulsed by all y'all. I'm sure listeners are repulsed by me. Some listeners. But the insanity. Chuck Todd? Oh, how dare they? How dare they hire her? What are you talking about? Why would she want to be hired was the question. Because she's really not a conservative. But that's neither here nor there. But when you see what went on this weekend, well, Meet the Press, she was on the show. I didn't watch it. You know, Meet the Depressed is no longer on my watch list. I mean, I don't think I've watched that show since, oh my gosh, Tim Russert died. Really? I think I tried to watch it a few times after that, but I never was able to. And so then they put in Kristen Welker. Who knows who she is? I never knew who she was, so I definitely wasn't tuning in for that. So then they put her on, Ronna McDaniel, on Sunday on the Meet the Depressed show. And what is that? 2 minutes and 21 seconds of television. And the story was the program itself became the story. This is a mess. The modern news ecosystem and cable news in particular, it's toxic. It's a revolving door of politicians and political operatives and the mainstream media. It's grotesque. And that's as clear as I can be on what I thought about this whole mess. Another Meet the Press show guest who was on said that McDaniel's credibility was shot. That here's a person who joined Donald Trump in attacking the press and members of the press and members of this network. You know, who cares? You guys are not that important. But you can never convince them of that. She put journalists at risk. I heard somebody say that this weekend. Who? Who did she put at risk? Ronna McDaniel? She just didn't have that kind of power. And definitely not that kind of brain power. Anyway. But that's what we talked about this weekend. Instead of the really important stories, like what happened in Russia? I have no idea. Dan Bongino's got me all fascinated now because the story has not yet been told of what that ISIS-K, what their intent was and how they got past all that security and took out 140 people and injured all the rest of them and then were immediately arrested. There's something that just stinks about that story. And I'm sure that we'll get a complete explanation of it from Tucker Carlson because he loves to cover stories about Moscow. I don't know. It's crazy. It's all crazy. I just turn it off at the end of the show. I'll walk away from the news for the next, till I wake up in the morning at 5:15. I can't. I have to let my stomach calm down so that I can eat dinner, right? So I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at 3 o'clock, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. And then, of course, may God bless you, may God bless Israel, and may God bless the United States of America. See you tomorrow at 3.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.